All right, try number two.
Did we restart the whole thing? Or?
Yes, we started the whole thing.
All right, restarted the whole thing. Y'all didn't hear us for about 10 seconds.
We're only about 15 seconds in, so I think we're safe.
Well, you didn't miss much. All we said was we talked about the Lions and the Chiefs game tonight, so that's kind of like the opening game for the NFL this week.
You got anybody playing tonight?
I don't think so. I have anybody. I think the guy I play might have one person. To be honest,
are you going against Jacob?
Yeah, okay. Going against Jake, the Gator Man, right now. But no, I got Jake. I think you got Trevor.
Mm-hmm.
You playing Trevor?
He's got two people tonight.
Who's he got?
Saint Brown, was that his name?
Amara, the receiver.
And Pancheco.
Okay, so running back.
Running back, and then I'd have a kicker for Detroit. That's the only person that I play.
Okay, I feel like he can have some points being scored today.
It's the opening game. It's prime time.
Maybe. Yeah, I know, like, Kelsey's not playing for the Chiefs.
Is he for sure not playing?
I mean, he's listed as questionable, but, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at it as through week one. Like, why would he play week one?
Just let him rest?
I mean, unless they're about to lose this game, maybe he comes in and does a couple plays real quick.
They're playing in Kansas City, right?
I think so. But okay. I would not risk somebody like Travis Kelsey on my team. Week one over like a hyperextended knee. I'm like, dude, you're sitting out for three games.
If you listen to the podcast last week at the very end, and Kale was talking about betting, you'd have lost money last week.
Oh, what did I say?
With the Utah Florida game.
I hit that, didn't I?
You said Utah was going to win the game, which you said was going to be within six.
Well, did I say it was
within
six?
I believe you said within six.
Yeah. What was it? It was like a
blowout. Like, I would say blowout. That's probably 13 points.
13? Yeah. Because I remember it was
you definitely picked Utah to win, though.
It was close the first half, and then the second half, they kind of started to pull away a little bit. Mm. But if you ever know me, I'm a money line boy, so you won money. Just saying.
Don't repeat on the spread.
I'm not a big spread guy. Like,
I'm learning as I go. Kel's been betting on games. Is your second year to do it now?
Starting to.
And Kel's pretty damn good at it, so.
I would like to say I'm decent at it.
Compared to most people that I've talked to, you're pretty good at it.
Especially with football, I think. I think football is definitely one that, like, I think I've got an actual, like, dial in on, I feel
I think so.
Everything else is kind of like hit or miss, but football, I feel like I got a good read on.
Okay. Well, what we got on the docket today,
Kale? Well, first thing I want to talk about is we got to talk about Ragin. I think we got to talk about Ragin. Just not necessarily about anything, but we have so many people going to Ragin, I feel like, this year. And I feel like last year we had a couple people, but I feel like this year we have more. Do you not feel that way?
I don't know. I don't know how many people we had last year.
I feel like we had like maybe a handful, maybe more than a little bit.
I don't know if we broke 10 last year. I think for sure we said 12.
12?
12 teams as of right now.
Okay.
I don't know if it's not a complete accurate. It's either 11, 12, or 13.
It's not, somewhere in that ballpark.
It's between 22 and 26 people.
All
right. As of right now, which potentially I know Brooke had said something about maybe potentially something.
Brooke, okay.
Brister. And then I know Sarah and Jordan are playing.
Sarah and Jordan are kind of going back and forth right now. So
I think you talked to him yesterday. Did they decide?
I brought it up again yesterday, and I think they said something along the lines of like, I think we're going to try the workout, and if it goes well, we're going to do Ragin', and if it doesn't go well, they're just going to do the Hurricane Comp.
Okay. When are they going to practice it?
I think they're going to do it today.
Okay.
I think they're doing it today.
You saw they released the other workout?
The AMRAP? The 9-minute AMRAP?
The 9-minute AMRAP.
Yeah, I think it's a 9-minute AMRAP, 18 toes to bar, 15 wall balls.
Heavy ball, for at least prescribed.
Yeah, 30 and 20 for the RX division, and then you have the 12 power cleans, and then 9 bar muscle ups. If you're doing scale, if it's pull-ups.
I believe so. I don't know what the number is for the pull-ups.
I think it's 9.
Is it just 9?
Yeah, I think it's just 9 pull-ups. I think I'm pretty sure it's just 9 pull-ups. But, I mean, that's a lot of people, I feel like.
Me and Nick were talking about that one. I don't know what that's a lot of strategy on that one. And plus, he said there's going to be a buffer zone, right? So there's a transition. You're not going to be able to stand side by side. So there is going to be, you have to transition to tag your partner in. So there's going to be time wasted every time you want to trade a movement out.
For sure. But I think it's going to be a good one because I think the way the movements are ordered are in the athlete's favor to me. Because like going from like toes to bar, you're going straight to wall balls. Mm-hmm. So like you're literally going to do toes to bar. They're going to have a target right there. You're going to hop off the toe to bar rig. You're just going to spin, grab the ball, I imagine, pick it up and go.
But my question is though, is like, where is the other athlete standing?
Standing?
Is it going to be like right behind the rig, or is it going to be on the other side of the floor?
No, it's going to be on the
other
side of the
floor. So you're saying it's going to be like a 25 to 40 foot transition?
Because remember last year's workout with the power snatches, double unders, mm-hmm. bar muscle ups?
You had to transition that far? You had
to transition from behind the mat.
So,
and rolling?
Rolling again. Good break there.
But that's why I imagine it would be the same, like, I guess, like structure.
So tell me what you think about this. And this is bullshitting here on the podcast before we kind of get into it. So I was talking to Nick about it. Damn. Computer going off there. But you tell me, like, oh, I think that's a bad idea. So we're going to experiment with it because there's a lot of strategy involved that with the transition period in there.
Okay.
So the idea being 9 minutes, I think potentially what you're looking at is 4 rounds and some change.
I told Sid, like, probably like 4. I think 5 would be impressive.
5 would be really impressive. I'm thinking 4 and change. Yeah. It's kind of more realistic. And so the thought process was potentially, now we have to run through it to see if it's actually feasible or not. But essentially, you do a whole round.
One person?
Whole round.
Okay.
So you do, and at that point in time, you're only having to do 2 total rounds with about a 2 to 2.5 minute rest between each round.
Between?
You only got to do it twice. And then the third round being whatever you can accomplish at that point in time.
Okay. I mean, the reps are low enough for y'all to do that, I would say. The only question mark I would have for that would be the power cleans.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right.
I mean, it's going to have to be fast singles. It's going to have to be fast singles. The power cleans and the bar muscle is going to be the worst part of the workout, no doubt. And, but the thing is, the question is like how much transition is going to be involved? Because running 25, 30 feet to tag partner, and your partner's got to run 25, 30 feet to come back.
Yeah.
You're burning potentially 10 seconds of transition.
See, this is what I imagine. I imagined, let's say y'all do that. Let's say y'all go unbroken on toga bar. Let's say you do your unbroken wall balls. You're going to run from your target to your bar, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And then from your bar to your partner is probably not going to be that far, is how I imagine it. So, like, if you were to do 6 singles or 8 singles, mm-hmm. I don't know if it would be that far of a distance to go tag your partner at that point. I think from the rig to your partner would be...
So, my question at that point in time is, essentially, that person is doing a 3/4 round, but then partner B does essentially a full round.
Partner B would essentially do what? The 6 or whatever?
You'd have to go from 9. You'd have to go 4 power. So you do 8. Partner B would have to do 4 power cleans into 9 bar muscle ups, into 18 total bar, into 15 wall ball, and then another 8 power clean.
Like going from bar muscle ups.
Before you come back close to the partner again.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think that's a tough transition going from 9 bar muscle ups to 18 total bar.
For sure.
Compared to going 18 total bar and having a break before you go back there and do 9 bar muscle ups.
Go back to it, like have a big rest. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely like something y'all need to play with.
So we talked about it, like potentially timing out doing an individual round both. So he does a round, I do a round.
Go for it.
Stop, see where that kind of puts us time-wise. And then doing 2 rounds as if we were going to break it up with the longer transition and see what the time difference is there. Because if it's like 30, 45 seconds difference.
That's a big difference.
In a 9-minute workout, it's a big difference.
Huge.
And so... I didn't know what your thought process was.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, I would have to like sit down and like actually like think about it because like right now, it's hard for me to think about that in my head. I have to like, I'm a writer. I would have to put it on paper, but I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea. If y'all can hold your pace on power cleans, which I imagine y'all should be able to.
And you have to essentially just grit through 2 full rounds.
Yeah.
With a rest in between each round.
Yeah. That's not a bad way to go about it. I mean, that one's going to suck if y'all do it like that, but I mean... It's competition. You're gonna have to suck it up a little bit.
The power cleans is the.
I think that's the shitty. I think bar muscle. You said bar muscle is power cleans, but I'm like power cleans is probably the worst part.
No doubt. And I also talked to Trey because obviously he did Raging last year, and also the X factor that you just don't consider when you're there is how slippery that bar is.
The pull-up bar. Yeah.
Because that's a big game changer doing 18 to the bar.
They changed them, right? They did change them though. They changed it to like a more knurling.
He said they were still pretty slick last year.
Probably still slick.
So going from a slippery bar on 18 to bars and bar muscle-ups could be tough.
Could be. I think as long as y'all flopping things over, which y'all been trying to figure that out here lately, I think y'all would be okay. I feel like it's for people that don't flop it over on bars like that, it gets really tough.
Okay. And what do you mean? What do you mean?
So for people, so that, I'm saying, flop it over, like everybody knows what I'm talking
the podcast
about,
room is like, people don't know what yeah, you're talking
true,
about.
Very right true. So when I say flop it over, I mean like having longer grips.
That sounds very sexual.
It kind of does. But you, instead of putting your fingers in the holes, you essentially just hold it with your thumb. Like you're holding the outside of the grip of your thumb and just throwing your hand over the bar. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much like a more aggressive, like suicide grip almost. Mm-hmm. But that's essentially what I mean by that. So you're not putting your fingers into the actual grips.
Okay.
Which I think is the way to go, but whatever.
Right. So what we got?
From here, the boring number range one today, I'm going to go straight into like a programming question for you.
Okay.
Okay. It's kind of like a gym-related question, but when you're programming for our class-wise, do you keep in mind who's actually at your gym? So the actual members in your gym, or are you just kind of picking like a kind of style and like push, pull, press, like are you just kind of going about it like that?
Well, I think when you
actually, a little bit of both.
Well, it's a little bit of both, right? So you do have to counterbalance the movement patterns, which we talked about this on other podcasts, where you're trying to balance out how many times you're pressing in a week, pushing in a week, squatting, hinging, carrying, things of that nature. But when you put the application of, okay, if I'm going to put a pull movement into this particular workout, let's say it's going to be bar muscle-ups as an example, mm-hmm. well, you need to understand as a gym owner, what is the highest capability of somebody in your gym? And then obviously modify thereafter,
okay.
right? Now, that doesn't mean that every workout needs to be 30 bar muscle-ups in a row,
yeah.
right? There's different stimulus there. It could be a workout that only has 3 bar muscle-ups in each individual round, which isn't a high volume. But yeah, I mean, you wouldn't, as a gym owner, probably want to program a workout in your gym that has, let's say it's 3 rounds, that has 15 bar muscle-ups in a round, and your person who's the best at bar muscle-ups in your gym can only do 2 unbroken bar muscle-ups.
Yeah.
That probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense on that standpoint. So yeah, you definitely have to consider where your top level of your fittest athletes in your gym fall to determine that program. Because the hard part about something like CrossFit, because it is a complex program, and you have so many different varying fitness levels and uh-huh. goals that you have to kind of distribute the wealth evenly, where the programming has to be as best as you can suited to every individual person. That's where the color system comes into play. But that doesn't, you know, if somebody, for instance, can't do bar muscle-ups, they might complain, like, I don't know why he programmed so many bar muscle-ups, or because I can't do bar muscle-ups well.
Like, there's, like, 2 people in the gym that did the work.
But there's also, in our particular gym, I mean, I don't know the number is on it, I'd be willing to bet at least 30-plus people in our gym can do bar muscle-ups
yeah.
at this point. Compared to most gyms, I would say that's relatively high.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take away from them as well. And so,
like you're saying, like you can't like just never program bar muscle-ups because you actually have people that...
Yeah. Because I mean, if you take it as a whole, yeah, majority of people in the gym can't. The amount of spam calls in the gym is ridiculous. But we have more athletes at our gym who can't do bar muscle-ups than comparatively who can. And with that being said, that still doesn't mean that we should not program bar muscle-ups.
Uh-huh.
Because you still have to feed those athletes for what their needs are and what their wants are.
For sure.
Because I can always modify and adjust a workout, quote unquote. It sounds bad to say it this way, but like structure it down.
Down.
And that's
it's
not what I mean. It's not,
down,
it's not that it means like I'm saying like it's a lesser workout, because those are still tough workouts, right? But for instance, it's a lot easier to program them that way compared to saying, all right, here's the prescribed variation that's going to have pull ups. Say it's going to have 20 pull ups. Well, then there's no bar muscle that's actually programmed
uh-huh.
at that point in time. You're like, well, what's the Black Plus workout? It's going to have
with the RX Plus
bar muscles, right? So you do have, and same thing when it comes to the weight loading of a workout as well, where if we have a front, like for instance, tomorrow's workout has 205 shoulder overhead,
mm-hmm.
right? Where, you know, probably percentages of the athletes doing that prescribed tomorrow, especially on the female side,
no.
it's not going to be a ton, right?
Even guys, like, That'll be a tough one.
Yeah, like I mean, also you have like Brandy and somebody maybe like Haley,
mm-hmm.
who's going to potentially give that shoulder overhead weight a shot, and maybe one or other person that I can't think of the top of my head right now. But 97% of the gym tomorrow, the girls especially, are not going to be touching that loading on the shoulder overhead,
yeah.
and the guys probably a little bit bigger percentages, maybe like 5% of the guys, 8% of the guys might do prescribed tomorrow at 205, but once again, most are not.
Yeah.
And so once again, you can always modify and adjust the weight down, right? And I still try to keep in mind at least programming 1 to 2 workouts per week that, in my eyes, that a good portion of the gym can still do the workout prescribed, okay, right? Because I still think people still enjoy to be able to do, oh shit, I did a...
Kind of like yesterday's workout.
Well, like for instance, I was kind of looking at it yesterday afternoon. I saw Maddie had did the workout prescribed. I was like, look at freaking Maddie go. Like, and it might have been her first ever black RX prescribed workout, right? But that's a really big accomplishment for somebody like her who's maybe never done one before. Like, oh shit, I did a black workout. And so I try to keep that in mind at least 1 or 2 days a week where I'm like, okay, there's a good potential that a good portion of the gym could do the workout prescribed. It doesn't make it it's a lesser workout because more people can do it RX. It's still a tough-ass workout.
I would consider yesterday being like a tough workout.
Yeah, but the complexity of the workout is there's lower, right? The weight loading itself is not extremely aggressive.
And the volume, not crazy.
And the volume's not aggressively high, but it's still a tough workout. Mm-hmm. And just like yesterday's workout where you could, you know, if you ever do toes to bar, you can probably manage holding sets of 3 to 6 reps on that workout. You can manage the row, you can manage the wall balls. And so that's where I, in my eyes, I try to program. It doesn't always exactly work out each individual week, but that's what I try to at least strive for.
Okay. Well, I mean, so you do take it into play though. Like that.
That's no, that's definitely a consideration. It's not like I'm always thinking of who's the best athlete in the gym. Like, let's say we take like somebody like Brandy. I'm not thinking every workout is structured to her.
To her.
Right? It's, there are some workouts where you think about, okay, if I want a heavy day.
You have that opportunity.
Well, heavy is obviously has to be heavy to
the
top end level of the gym, right? Or she's not going to be the stimulus or he's not going to be the stimulus of the workout.
True. That makes sense. That makes sense.
If that makes more sense. Or like if I want
to
have...
You're trying to create a stimulus for the top athlete and then from there on
triple
you kind of like you can fix it to everybody else.
Well, you triple it down, right? If I want a heavy day, well, it's got to be heavy for everybody. It just can't be heavy for just some people. It has to be heavy for everybody. And it's the same thing if I want to have a more complex gymnastics day. Well, then that...
You got
to
take in mind your best gymnastics person.
Exactly. I have to take in, you know, maybe like a Cole Hildebrand, who's one of your more better gymnastics guys. Well, what kind of volume that can he hold and what kind of complexity can he hold in a workout? And you have to take those things into consideration. And then from there, you can then modify and dial back for each individual person thereafter.
Okay. I feel like that's a pretty solid way to go about it. Because, I mean, I feel like I've definitely been to gyms. Have you ever been to a gym and done the workout and not seen, like, one RX name on the board?
Yeah.
Because I definitely have.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like where that question kind of came from.
And I guess there's a point in time that maybe you can maybe trickle some of those things in as... So, like, I'm trying to put myself in that particular situation where...
I'm thinking of, like, newer gyms maybe don't have the volume of people, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of where my head goes first.
Yeah, so maybe, say you have a gym of 60 members, mm-hmm. right? You're maybe been open less than a year, and majority of your population there is 40 plus, and maybe have a handful that's under 40, which no competitive backgrounds, not very serious, and across just using a general fitness background, that would it be advantageous to program something like a bar muscle up in a program? And I would venture to say, like, maybe trickle that in like once a month.
Yeah.
I say, like, hey, like, here's what a top end maybe that you could see. And like, it's not like I'm programming like 10.
Maybe program like four, five
in a workout, right? Knowing that probably nobody in the gym is going to do it. But at least gives people the idea of, like, if this is something that you guys want to do, it's potential that we possibly do
have,
right? Like, somebody's like, oh, maybe I want to try to do that. Come here, if you
maybe like program spark it, somebody into like maybe like wanting to then try to get a bar muscle up at that point.
Because if you never program, you're like, what's the point of doing it if you're never going to program it? So I do see the advantageous to want to program those things. It's got to be very smart and intelligent to program like all the time.
All the time.
Because and towards the, why the hell are you always programming bar muscle ups? Nobody here can do bar muscle
ups. Sure.
And you kind of have to test the waters on that as well, because depending on your gym and the members in your gym, you have to kind of see what they want. And if you're programming a bar muscle up once a month and nobody shows remotely any interest in doing it, mm-hmm. and kind of thinks it's a stupid movement, then why program it?
Sure.
Right.
Because like I know like when like Laura happened and COVID was all happened when I was in Shreveport, just walking in and looking at the whiteboard, just like literally all I have to do is walk in, look at the whiteboard, see what the workout is today, and I'm like, you can already kind of tell like what kind of gym it is almost mm-hmm. at that point in time.
Well, I think sometimes as our gym you can kind of get caught in your bubble.
Super like lucky to have so many like, not necessarily I want to say fit people, but like people that like didn't just do the wad. Like I feel like we have more people that venture out and want to try bar muscle ups or rope climbs or all these cool movements.
Well, I think sometimes as a member here, you can kind of not maybe feel like you're the fittest individual person, when in all actuality, definitely to the general population, you're really damn fit.
For sure.
But even to the general CrossFit population, you're
fit.
Pretty freaking fit comparatively to most CrossFit gyms out there. As a gym as a whole, we're pretty damn fit as a gym comparatively. And I've seen plenty of people who have maybe moved here from a different gym or just dropping in. And I've heard this remark at least a handful of times that, you know, 10 plus years is wherever they're from. And they'll say something along the lines of, at my gym, I was like the best guy at my gym, like crushing everybody. Here, I'm just mediocre.
Mediocre, middle of the pack.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so Haley had told me when she had gone to Galveston or whatever, wherever gym she went to in Galveston, she was like, I was really the best person in the gym every day. And like, she's still super fit, but like at here, like she's not top of the pack. You know, she's like, every once in a while, she might have like a really good performance, right? Wheelhouse workout. But I just think that's funny to me.
Yeah.
But from there, this is actually gonna be a question from Sydney. So she had a question. That was actually a really good question, I thought.
Okay.
Which kind of relates to her, but I think it relates to a lot of people too, is especially with Raging coming up. How do you think about, let's say, trying to lose a little bit of weight, all right?
Because this is a personal
question. It's kind of personal, but I feel like it can relate to people also. It's like having performance goals, right? And like having the wants to do well and perform well at Raging and be the fittest you could be, maybe. But also trying to maybe lose like anywhere between like maybe like, let's say, like 3 to 10 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. How do you balance that act of feeling good while you're working out while also being in like that calorie deficit?
Well, I think the calorie deficit of what you're doing is very important.
Okay.
So what I mean by that, kind of backing up for a second, is you have to understand, you have to be in a consistent, two things. You have to be consistently training at a certain volume per week. So each individual week doesn't vary a whole lot. So meaning, I'm working out 5 days a week for an hour or 90 minutes a day, that has to be consistent from week to week. You can't have these peaks and valleys where 1 week maybe you're training 13 hours that week and the next week you're training 4 hours,
okay,
right? Because that's going to deviate how many calories you're burning in a week. So that's the very first thing you have to determine, what your training volume looking like. Is the same consistent from week to week? And then two is, with that training volume now in mind, I have to know where my maintenance calories is with the training volume that I'm training at, right? So my training, my maintenance calories is going to vary, for instance, from if I was just training 4 hours a week compared to if I'm training 10 hours a week, right? That calorie maintenance changes, right? Because my energy expenditure is higher on the 10-hour week training volume compared to 4 hours, right? So I need to know what the training volume that I'm training at, where my calorie maintenance levels are, and then from there, making sure that I'm in just enough of a calorie deficit to see some type of weight loss happen, but not so much aggressively where it starts to affect my performance. Because if I start to aggressively bring down my calories, that's where energy levels will start to deteriorate and recovery will start to be impeded because of the low calorie deficit. Because essentially you're trying to stay within about a 10% window of that calorie deficit. You start creeping out that past that 10% range, that's when you start running into the issues. Like we said, the energy levels start to crash.
Okay.
Recovery starts to be impeded from that. You have the potential of, even though you might lose weight a little bit faster, it might not just be pure body fat. It's probably going to be some skeletal muscle mass involved there as well. You'll notice that your strength is maybe starting to come down a little bit. And even potentially your condition, you could suffer just because of the due of lack of energy that you're able to put forth in each individual workout. So it's making sure it's a fine line between doing too much of a calorie deficit and doing just enough. So you have to be willing to go to slower progress.
I would say like you're almost like testing by trial a little bit.
A little bit to a degree. And that's why you have to monitor the data, so to speak, where you have to monitor how many calories you're eating on as a whole on a daily basis. as a given week and averaging that calories. And then from there, obviously monitoring your body weight on a daily basis and taking that average, right? So let's say I'm taking in on an average of 1,800 calories and my body weight sitting at 130 pounds. And I do that for a 2 week period. Well, I notice over a 2 week period that my weight is still averaging 130 pounds. Now that doesn't mean that you're necessarily doing badly, especially if you do an in-body exam, you notice that your body fat percentage is lowering, your skeletal muscle is actually increasing, which is the potential that happened. But if you're solely just focusing on weight alone because you're trying to make yourself lighter for like bar muscle ups or something like that, and it's like, I really don't care if my body composition is changing a whole lot, I need to drop weight because I need to be lighter. Well, if that's the sole objective, then you know, okay, well, right now I'm still at a maintenance level where my weight is not moving, then it has to elicit some type of calorie further deficit. So right now from 1,800, I might drop down to like 1,650, 1,700 calories as an average from week to week. And then obviously go a couple of weeks, see how that monitor it, and then go and make adjustments as needed.
Okay.
Right. That would be your best bet. But you have to have those data points to understand that. If you're not taking those data points, you don't know, you're kind of shooting in the dark and you're just kind of guessing if you're doing things properly.
Okay.
Right? Especially when it comes to your amount of calories that you're consuming. If you don't know that, you're gonna have a really hard time understanding what your average calories are to understand how much further you need to go down.
So essentially you're pretty much saying, like, know how many calories you're working out, or know how many hours a week you're working out, you actually have to track your macros. So like that's something that you're gonna have to do.
Mainly, I mean, I would say
just to have a general like ballpark.
The thing is, like, nutrition is, like, it's so subjective in the way of how extreme you want to take it. On the base level, the most important thing would be knowing how many calories you are consuming to ultimately to dictate weight loss, right? Because that's ultimately to determine that. Now, is it the best method? Probably not. I mean, you're more advantageous to also track your protein, carbs, and fats on top of that, but at least, like, the next tier up would be tracking calories and protein if it becomes too overwhelming. But if you don't do that, you're just kind of going by feel. And that's really hard. Especially on a day-to-day basis that, I mean, every single day you wake up more, one day you're more tired, one day you're more alert, one day you're more hungry, one day you're less hungry. And even myself, where I can eat the same things on a daily basis, and some days I'm more hungry than others, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm in a further calorie deficit that day.
Yeah.
It's just my appetite's higher that day, maybe because it's more warm that day, or maybe I didn't sleep as much that day. There's multiple factors that can come into play, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I need to eat more that day or eat less that day, depending on how my appetite is. I think that's how
some people operate. You're still going to eat the same no matter what.
But yeah, I think that's how
you're not going to change it from day to day. Like, you're going to stick to your routine, and then if you have to change your routine later on down the road, you're going to change your routine.
Yeah. Right? Based off where the numbers are showing, based off where my goals are. Right? I can't, if I'm just going by how I'm feeling that individual day, like based off if I'm hungry or less hungry, I'll just eat less that day or eat more that day, depending on how I'm feeling. That's going to be so subjective, and you're going to have a really hard time knowing if you're on the right track or not. Because you don't, it'd be like you go into the mall and be like, do I want to spend money today? Do I not want to spend money today? I'm trying to save money. You're like, oh, well, no, you got to have some sort of a game plan to do that.
For sure.
So,
for sure. And this is kind of good kind of question rolling into this one. Is as a coach, so I'm putting you in your coach shoes now. So as a coach, let's say you have somebody that's been doing program, you've been programming for a long time, right? You've been programming for a long time, and they have performance-esque goals, right? So maybe it's a mile, it doesn't really matter, but the performance goal, right? And they're frustrated with themselves on not getting that goal, right? When do you kind of maybe sit down with them and have that conversation about nutrition, right? And not necessarily about the programming. Or do you even bring that up at all?
Well, it depends on the situation.
Okay.
Because you might have somebody coming to you and they have this goal they're after. That's like, let's say it's a performance-based goal. And
it could be right performance-based, it could be like just a general goal and just whatever, right?
Okay. Let's say it's some type of a general-based goal of some kind, whether it be performing better in the gym of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that water bottle real quick. Gotta take a little pause. I got a little itch in my throat.
I'm going to see what life real quick, guys.
I'm choking over here. All right. But is you have to assess what kind of commitment they're really wanting to give you.
Okay.
Because they can pay you some type of lip service and say, man, Cody, I really want to do X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds great. And how many people come to you and say, I really want to get better at CrossFit. But then their actions don't really
happen, right?
Show you that they really want to get that better at CrossFit. And until that commitment is now shown, there's really no point in making the nutrition conversation really happen at that point in time. So that would be kind of like my first answer is, what's the point of bringing up that conversation if they're not even coming in the gym consistently enough to get better, quote unquote, the goals that they're having, right? Because that would be the first step. It's like you have to be more consistent with the game plan we're putting forward. If it's a mile run, for example, like they're trying to get a sub 6 minute run and you're programming 3 running workouts a week, and every week you go to check how their progress is, and on a weekly basis, at best, they maybe get 2 of the 3 sessions in, if at all. Okay, well, that's not a consistent enough rate.
Yeah.
And you're doing it, and maybe they do it off and on, but it has to be like for months and months and months. And let's say you take example 2, where maybe now we're 6 months down the road, they're very consistent with their programming, they come in, they knock it out, the intensity's there, the intention's there.
You can see that they want the goal.
You can see the want to happen. Then, yeah, at that point in time, if you don't, you kind of see the frustration start to build where, and also it, there's so many case scenarios here because also it's...
Well, there's like so many variables in this question.
Variables, but, you know, depending on how far away they're from that individual goal,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're running an 8 minute mile or running a 6 minute mile, it's going to take a lot longer if I was running a 6:30 mile.
Correct.
Right. But bearing all the examples, to say that the goal is within somewhat of an arm's reach. It's not like an extremely big, audacious goal. It's something that you're like, okay, probably in a 6 month window, we could probably reach.
Okay.
Let's just use that as an example. And you know, somewhere around that 4 to 6 month mark, as you're getting closer to that, they've made some progress. So they've kind of stalled out and they're really not making anything further and they are consistent with the program. Yeah. At that point in time, you would probably say, okay, we need to probably have a sit down conversation and talk about, you know, outside of these walls, what are some things that maybe we control to help out to elicit a better response? Because even people that I've talked to plenty of times, when they finally actually do take control of their nutrition and you get a better rap on that, one of the first things they say is how much better they feel in the gym, how much better they perform in the gym, right? Without doing anything else.
Just eating and following nutrition. Just improving.
How much better their energy levels are, how much better, how much more win they have in workouts, and how much they can recover from session to session. And obviously, if you're just slapping on a bunch of volume of training, that does elicit some sort of response to help, but you're only talking like 50% of the pie, right?
Sure.
So you have to talk about the other half of saying, well, how many hours of sleep are you getting? What kind of stresses that you are going under? What does your nutrition look like? There are multiple things there, because somebody can say, you know, let's say example for me where, you know, like, well, I just had a newborn baby 3 mm-hmm. months ago and obviously sleep sporadic and not as consistent as I'd like it to be, or you know, obviously you're a lot more stressed with having 4 children and having 3 extra kids that obviously you're not able to recover from session to session like you would be otherwise. And having those general conversations would be advantageous, and obviously then talking about nutritional wise and things like that, because there are some things that you can't control, like my situation where I can't control
sleep.
If the baby wakes up or, you know, whatever it may be, then that just is what it is. I can't say, Caroline, shut the hell up, go back to sleep.
Yeah.
I can't say that, right? But if it's just a simplistic of, okay, you're staying up till 11:30 every night watching Netflix, let's try to rein that down to like 10 o'clock every single night.
2 hours of sleep. Right?
Exactly. Like, it's just, those are simplistic variables that you have to discuss with somebody that that people sometimes don't think about when it comes to achieving a physical goal, where it's saying, okay, well, if I just go out and train for an extra 30 minutes three times a week on working on running, then that's going to get me to the sub 6 minute goal.
And I think that's what a lot of people think. I think a lot of people think that they could just work out hard 2 to 3 times a week extra, mm-hmm. and like something's just going to magically happen.
And it can.
Sure. And I've seen it before. If you're consistent enough and you stick to it, like mm-hmm. eventually the goal will happen.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's a matter of time. You know, not saying matter of time. There's a good, still a good potential that could still happen, right? But you're leaving a lot of money on the table.
I think if they work, let's say you take somebody that just does programming, and you say take somebody that does programming and eats well and knows their nutrition. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you, if you both give them a 6 month time frame, the personal nutrition will be, I bet, 2 times as far.
Well, you're accelerating the process a lot faster.
And I don't think people understand how much it accelerates your process.
Yeah.
It's almost like your own, like, mini enhancer, you know?
Well, that's where I was kind of getting at. So,
like, you know, that's your natural enhancer to, like, do better, right?
Because they like PEDs, like steroids. You can't just take steroids and not train.
Correct.
And you get bigger and more fit. That's not how it works. Essentially, what happens when you take these PEDs is it allows the system now to recover at a way faster rate than it would mm-hmm. be otherwise. You still have to do everything
properly. You still have to do the workouts.
You still got to do everything properly, right? But you're just accelerating the process a lot faster. And so essentially, what you're doing is obviously without the help of PEDs, you're accelerating the process faster compared to somebody who's just, like you use an example of, just doing programming.
Yeah.
Like I'm just slapping on more volume of a particular movement or exercise to get better at that particular movement, but I'm not going to take care of my nutrition. I'm not going to sleep that well. I'm not going to hydrate. I'm not going to reduce my stress levels compared to somebody who would do those things. They're going to see a lot of progress a lot faster otherwise. So somebody might take 3 to 4 months to get that goal. It might take you 6 to 8 months to get that goal.
Right.
That's just simply what it comes down to. It's not saying that you won't get it. It's just you're definitely making the process take a lot longer than it should be.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's just kind of a simple answer.
And then from there, like, you know, we've been talking about sleep a little bit. And I think, like, as I've gotten older, I feel like sleep is, like, one of the more important things, honestly, when it comes to, like, training. Like, let's say nutrition. I think it's, like, it's up there as, like, top three,
mm-hmm.
I feel like. And, like, what would be some things that some people could do to maybe improve their sleep that, not necessarily, like, going to bed at, like, a certain time or anything like that, but, like, I know, like, for instance, you said you kind of played around with, like, the, what was it called? Like, the little light that wakes you up instead of, like,
instead of an alarm clock.
The alarm clock. Do you mm-hmm. still do that?
So, I haven't done it because with the baby in the room.
Okay.
With the light. I haven't done it because it'd wake the baby up. It was okay.
Like, did you find it actually, like, help you at all? Or, like...
I didn't really notice a dramatic difference, right? I think sometimes you just kind of experiment with things. So you hear it and just kind of see. I don't think it made a humongous difference in us.
And like, for people not know what I'm talking about, it's pretty much, like, a little mini, like, half circle type of thing, right? Like, maybe it is a circle, but it sits on, like, the time of your bed. And instead of, like, your alarm clock going off, it pretty much just... gets brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter.
So you wake up. It's, the idea is that...
you're waking up like the sun, right?
If you think about hundreds of years ago, people didn't wake up to an alarm clock. They woke up to the sun waking up, light waking them up, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's the more natural variation to wake up to, not sound. Yeah. And so...
so something like blaring and like sounds like a siren waking
up. And so that's... you know, there, and I don't know the scientific jargon behind those protocols, but essentially you... it allows you to wake up in a better state compared to just alarm. And it's kind of like that sympathetic and parasympathetic system where kind of like that fight or flight thing where if you wake up to sound, naturally it's more of a like fight mode where you probably got woken in the middle of the night because of there's something lurking in the background trying to eat you compared to like just waking up by like the light waking you up where it's more of like a peaceful thing.
Like naturally waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, then like if you wake up on a Saturday or Sunday and you get to sleep in, you're more than likely, unless you are a consistent person who wakes at like 3 a.m, you're probably waking up more due to the light coming in your bedroom than like the alarm clock, right? And so it's kind of that same general concept that is the idea behind it. Like I said, I haven't done it in a while, but you can buy one on Amazon for like,
they're not that crazy. 20, 30 bucks maybe. Think, right? I mean, you can obviously probably buy like one that's super expensive. But
like, yeah, like 20, 30 bucks. And essentially it's just you set the alarm clock to whatever time. And what ends up happening is, let's say you set it for 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. I think around like 5 minutes before the alarm clock goes off, it actually starts off like a, with like a really dim light that you probably wouldn't notice. And each, it progressively gets brighter and brighter and brighter, where it hits like a certain, yeah, a certain peak, kind of like a sunrise, right? Okay. So it hits a certain peak of brightness that should be waking you up by 6 o'clock. Essentially is what it does, but it's supposed to allow you to have more of a peaceful rise compared to like just getting drawled it up by
a... I feel like it's so cool to me.
What, that?
Yeah, I think it's so cool.
You haven't tried it out?
No, I haven't tried it out, but I've seen like so many commercials and like ads about it that I'm like, it just looks so dang neat to me.
So,
but I don't know how confident I would be on it waking me up.
Well, I think you'd have to have a backup alarm just in case.
Just in case? Like,
and you can't have sound to it, I think, as well. It has both. So if you need to set an alarm with sound, you can do that as well.
You can do that?
Yeah, I think you can, at least with mine, you can have two alarms.
Oh, okay.
So you can set one for an individual time, and I'll see another for another time, where you can set one by light. Let's say you want to set another one for 6:05 with sound, if you're not
just in case, like you didn't wake up?
Just in case. So, but going back to your original question, like trying to get more quality sleep.
Yeah.
I think... with this particular topic, I think sometimes people can over-complicate it than it has to be, right? Where...
I feel like it's pretty simple.
Well, I think the first thing is, before you kind of think about like nighttime routine, is more so of what does your individual day look like first off is, mm-hmm. obviously the how much activity you are getting in a day
yeah.
is obviously very important. And what I mean by that is you do have people who work from 8 to 5 or a 9 to 5
you're
job.
You're not talking about gym. You're talking about literally how much they're moving.
Moving generally. Right? Like if you're working out consistently, that's another bonus, yeah. right? But I don't think people really consider and think about the activity outside the walls that you're doing. So if you're, you know, most of you guys have an Apple Watch or some type of fitness tracker of some kind.
Steps and all that.
Is how many steps you're getting in a day. And there is a lot of scientific research to the 10,000 steps. It used to be just kind of like a number thrown out there, but generally at least a minimum 8,000 to 10,000 plus is ideally what you're looking for in an individual day. So if you're not getting those things in, you're probably not producing enough energy output on a daily basis to elicit for you to want to be more tired. So that would be like my first response would be kind of monitor how much movement you're getting in a day. And if you're not getting enough, you need to start inducing that more, because obviously you can start to produce more or expend more energy that day, allow you to go to sleep easier. Caffeine consumption obviously is a big thing.
Sure.
Not getting caffeine in too late. Everybody's different on what they can...
Like their tolerance.
Tolerance on that and like how sensitive they are. Because I have noticed if I take anything probably past about 3 or 4, it does affect me at nighttime. Even though I don't feel like I'm really wide awake, I can still be like at 8, 9 o'clock and feel like I'm sleepy. But then I go to lay down, I physically know I'm not going to sleep for at least another hour just because that caffeine's still in me. About that 2-ish o'clock hour is usually where I try to cut off any type of caffeine consumption at that point in time. Everybody's different. You have to monitor that yourself. And then thirdly is kind of what, are you consistently doing the same things before you go to bed? I would say probably a lot of people usually are. But there are like some subtle things that most people usually know by now that can make it more advantageous. Like obviously having a cool room, not having a warm room. Some people obviously have like a box fan they like to use. Dark room, not having light. People you hear people like don't look at your phone or watch TV. But I mean, there's plenty, like for instance, like Kaylee could pass out watching TV.
Yeah.
But for me, I kind of more like zone in, like it gets my attention and kind of
you're
gets
like
heightened.
Watching, you're zoned in, you're yeah. looking at like what's
I get happening. More like a heightened aware state yeah. when I start watching TV, but everybody's different on that. And it's just, a lot of times it's just the simplistic thing of just fucking go to bed.
Just get in bed and go to bed.
Because people they start binge watching a yeah. movie or a series, and it's just a matter of like willpower of actually shutting the shit down and getting yeah. into bed.
I feel like another thing is like, I think people try to maybe go to bed early one night. Let's say they try to go to bed like an hour earlier than they normally can. And they just lay there with their eyes closed for mm-hmm. an hour. But it's the first time you're doing that.
Yeah.
Right? So like, it's just like any other routine. Like your body's not used to going to bed at 10 o'clock versus 11:30, right?
So it'll like, be like you going to
get used to that.
Well, let's say you wake up every single day at... Let's say you wake it up normally. Let's like say you see your, for instance, like in your shoes. You know, you don't have to be at work a lot of times, so noon or later.
Yeah.
Let's say you waking up at 8:30 every single morning, right? Well, on the weekend, more than likely you're not going to wake up at 5:30.
For sure.
Not naturally, right? But if somebody wakes up at 5:30 every single morning, more than likely they're probably not going to sleep till 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you do have that circadian rhythm, even if it may not be the full, like, 7+ hours that you're looking for, your body's still going to fall in some type of rhythm of some kind. Yeah. Right? And so, just like you said, if I'm always going to bed at midnight, I'm like, okay, I need to set a goal of getting to bed about 10. Well, don't expect to fall asleep very fast the first time.
For sure.
Right? You might toss and turn. You might say, oh, this is spoiled. I'm going to go back and watch some TV. But the more you do it regularly, obviously, the easier it'll come by.
The more routine you're going to get into, the more used your body.
Yeah.
The more, not even try to say what I'm about to say, because obviously I can't say it.
You're going to mess up the word. But I don't think it's a very complicated issue. I think for most people, it's just as simplistically of getting in the bed on a regular basis and doing that consistently over weeks and weeks and weeks, and how much that would help mental clarity, mood, recovery, hormone regulation, libido, like
stress.
all these other aspects in your life, anxiety levels, how much all these things would help you if you just got more regular sleep consistently.
Yeah.
And even just like
sporadically.
Yeah, even it's just as simple as getting an extra 30 minutes. You think, dude, like 30 minutes something.
People don't think 30 minutes is a lot. 30 minutes make a difference.
Well, you got to think, like, it's a compounding aspect. That's an extra 2.5 hours, just Monday through Friday.
Well, you get
that's an extra 2.5 hours of sleep.
Related to nutrition, as like your average throughout the week.
Yeah.
It's like, if you can average 30 extra minutes every single day, like,
yeah,
that's a lot of sleep that you just added to your week.
That's an extra 2.5 hours of sleep that you're
just
getting
to
otherwise. I mean, it's 10 extra hours of sleep a month.
Yeah.
You know, that's 120 hours a year that you're getting otherwise, right? And it's just the compounding aspect over and over and over again that people don't really think about. And then, I think at the end of the day, there's so much shit out there now with, you know, Andrew Huberman and all these people that are like very scientifically, like,
yeah,
these very crazy,
like, you gotta do it this way,
bedtime routines. And yeah, by scientific research, there is maybe like more advantageous things than others. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it's like, you just got to put the ass in the bed by a certain time on a consistent basis, and you're probably gonna start falling asleep more regularly at those times and getting more hours of sleep otherwise. And I would, like I said, I would probably just pair that up with making sure that you're getting in enough physical activity on a regular basis to obviously make yourself tired enough, and monitoring caffeine consumption, the supplementation that you're taking. And then on top of that, like, you know, if you wanna watch some TV or get on your phone before you go to fucking bed, I don't give a shit, as long as it doesn't really get you hyped up and aware. If you're somebody who's like, I can get on my phone and literally put it down and go back to sleep, that's fine too. But the problem is, you got to fucking put it down.
Yeah.
Because,
like, if you're somebody like you're me, for instance, like, if I lock into a video,
mm-hmm,
I'm most likely going to watch this video until it's over.
Well, you're going to start scrolling on TikTok, right?
I'm going to look
for another 2 more minutes and 2 minutes, like, before you know it,
you end up
minutes
on TikTok and you end up on Instagram, then you end up,
yeah,
on Facebook, and it's just a spiral.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. So,
but that is all I got for you, my guy.
No more?
That is all I got. All
right. Well, cool deal. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
And
I guess we'll keep this up till February. Winner for tonight? Honestly, I guess it's pretty much simple.
Put me on a tough one.
What's the spread on this game?
It's not a lot. It's like
2.5?
Six?
Okay.
They might even drop to like 4.5 if Kelsey's out. What Vegas is pretty much telling us tonight is it's a coin flip, is what they're saying.
So they're saying anybody's ball game.
They're saying anytime you see 7 or under, it's a coin flip.
So they're like, is it positive?
And so,
are you betting on this game?
No. If I were to,
you bet on the money line. Money line being, I saw this is something I knew the other day, so I'm using betting terminology.
Oh, look at him!
Look
go.
At me.
I'm rubbing off on.
That is strictly just picking who the winner of the game.
Correct. Is. Correct. So, I mean, if I were taking points, let's say I were to take a spread, I'd probably take the 6.5 that they're giving the Lions. So I'd, mm-hmm, probably take it. But if I'm going money line, like, say, hey, that's what I would do, I'm going to go Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Yeah.
It's a safe bet.
Safe bet. I mean, it's hard to bet against a guy like Patty Mahomes,
mm-hmm,
man. I mean, he can literally throw to high schoolers and probably beat the NFL team.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm rooting for the Lions, though.
Oh, yeah. So,
fuck you,
after this game, I want the Lions. I want the Lions to make the playoffs.
I'm going to be a mini Lions fan for sure. I was a mini Lions fan last year, and I'll be on that same bag.
You like cats. That's what it is. You're Lions, you're Bengals, you like the cats. You like
cats, cats. Jacksonville Jaguars.
Jacksonville, that's what I'm saying.
LSU.
You like all the cats, dog. I noticed that the other day.
I was going to make a preferred joke there. But
I was going to make a
joke, but I was like, well. But you know where I was going with that. But I'm also kind of a Jaguars fan this year. I'm kind of a bandwagoner on that. The only reason why I like the Bengals, because I actually had to go pick up Carter and Claire from Jake's today. They wouldn't play with Stella.
Okay.
And had this hat on. He goes, "You're a Bengals fan?"
Oh, God.
I'm like, I'm not. I'll be honest. Like, I'm not like a true Bengals fan. I'm like, I'm more of a Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, they're LSU guys.
I mean, that's why I like the Bengals, right?
Naturally,
like,
that's why I root for them now. Yeah, I'm like, but now if they were to both leave, I probably wouldn't be a Bengals fan anymore.
Probably.
But I'm more of a player standing because they're on the team. I like that team now. And so I'm definitely a bandwagoner on that sense. I'm not saying I've never been a true Bengals, like, hardcore fan forever.
Fan.
But I've never been a true NFL team fan for anything, really. Okay. I'm not, like, growing up, always, like, I had an individual team, and I've never been, like, a humongous Saints fan either. I mean, I like the Saints. I still root for them. But I'm not a
huge. You never have, like, one team that you love, right?
Yeah, I'm not, like, individually, like, oh, man, that's my team. Like, you like the 49ers. Yeah. That's your team. I don't really have,
you don't have
a team.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm a Bengals fan due to those players. If those players were to leave, I wouldn't be a Bengals fan.
See, that's like how I am with like the Saints or like the Chargers, right? It's like teams that like I like and I like to watch. But like at the end of the day, like if Justin Herbert from the Chargers were to get traded, like I'm like, nah.
Not Chargers fan.
You know, not, I don't really
like the hype's
Chargers,
not there
right?
anymore.
I don't really. That, like, you and Joe Burrow is like how I am with Justin Herbert. Like, I just like Justin Herbert. I think he's a good quarterback, right?
Yeah, same concept. Yeah, those are kind of the three teams I'm rooting for this year, though, is Bengals, Lions, Jaguars.
Jaguars? That's a good. I like that. I like that. I want the Jags to win their division. I want the Jags to win their division. I want Detroit to win their division. So I could be behind that. I want Cincinnati to win theirs, so.
That's a bit tough division.
Yeah.
Ravens, Browns, Steelers.
Steelers, yes. Browns, no. I don't think the Browns would be good. But the Ravens are a wild card to me. Yeah.
You don't know how that
they is. They can stay healthy. They could be
potentially tough. I think a lot of people were. I saw a lot of people were picking them to be number one in the division.
Really? The Baltimore?
Ravens, yeah.
I think it's a lot of hype, too, right now, though.
There's a lot of hype.
A lot of hype.
For sure.
A lot of hype. Anytime you get somebody like Odell, it's going to be like.
How much did Bosa sign up? Four last year. 17
million. See that?
How much was it?
So Nick Bosa just signed $177 million.
Oh my.
$177 million deal. Highest paid
for
defensive player ever.
So he jumped, what's his name? For
it was Aaron Donald.
Yeah, Aaron Donald. So he jumped up, right.
But I think that's why you see so many people like defensive players sitting out. It's like you see like Chris Jones and like Christian Wilkerson and like all these stud defensive linemen sitting out right now because Nick Bosa's defensive player of the year. So
is Chris Jones not playing tonight?
Not yet. He is not going.
That's a big factor.
He's not
too.
Going. That's huge, right? And so I think everybody's waiting on Nick Bosa to say his contract, and now everybody else can kind of like see what they can kind of get, you know? Because, I mean, if you don't know what your best defensive player is getting paid, like it's hard for you to, I guess, ask what you need or what you feel like you're worth. So yeah. I think now you'll start to see, like, give it like a week, you'll see that Chris Jones come back, Christian Wilkerson come back.
Wow. Okay.
That's a lot of money, though.
All right, well, that's the end of our sports podcast.
See ya!
Later.